coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. Are you a little down in the dumps about radio? Do you get a little disappointed or discouraged with the radio business? You're about to meet some people who will reinvigorate you about radio. It's World Radio Day with the student staff from WRHU at Hofstra University. That's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm delighted you could join us. We've got a little different program. Usually we talk about tech. Sometimes we take a deep dive into broadcast tech or audio tech, but today's a little bit different. Today we're going to be talking about, tech, but we're going to talk about a big event that just happened here in just the last couple weeks or so. It was World Radio Day, and I've got a big surprise for you. I'm going to click a button, and you're going to see the most amazing thing. Look at all these people. Welcome in. Look at it. So great to see these great people. Let's see. We're going to do really super quick introductions. In fact, we won't do titles and all that because I think that'll come through as we talk. But let's give it up. Say a big hello to Derek Futterman. Hey, Derek. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
And without a camera, it's Rachel Lusher. Rachel, welcome in. Glad to hear from you.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Edward Mabeza is here. Hey, Edward.
Hey, thanks for bringing us on.
It's good to see you. Andy Gladding is here. He's an old pro. He's been on the show before. Andy, welcome in.
Nice to be back.
Shayna Sengstock is here. Shayna, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having us.
And Crystal Bermudez is here. Crystal, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Hello. Nice to see all of you virtually.
All right. Well, we are all here to talk about an event that was called World Radio Day. And the show, our show title is kind of similar. It's Windows to the World with WRHU. Now, let's see can any of you be the spokesperson for this? Or can I just pick on you one at a time? I guess you all are pretty up on what's going on. Let me hit Derek up first. He's right next to me. Derek, tell me a little bit about what the show is about here. World Radio Day, what was that? What's WRHU, and how did you guys participate in that?
Okay, well, WRHU just won a major award from the Academy of Radio Arts and Sciences for UNESCO World Radio Day, the World Radio Day Award, one of the biggest awards we've won in our station's history. And, you know, 3 Marconi Awards, and now this, it's very humbling to say the least. And we decided, you know, to back up our receiving of this award and to enhance it a little more. Andy came up with the idea of putting on a World Radio Day special. So he called me in, I think, early January to pitch the idea, Rachel and Crystal as well. And what we did from there is came up with a concept, got a bunch of professionals in the industry to interview. And then we did an all-day broadcast on February 12th at WRHU from 7 in the morning until 11 at night, covering various topics in radio, from sports to music to news, whatever you can think of. And we went outside of Hempstead, New York. We went to, again, Taiwan, South, Africa. We went to Asia. We went to South America, Mexico, all over the place. And we really just got a taste of how radio impacts the world.
So, one of my stations got to be part of this. You guys graciously asked my radio station in American Samoa to be part of this. But and we'll talk more about that later. Let me ask Edward. You're kind of next on my screen, Edward. Talk to me a little bit about what you hope to accomplish by getting radio stations from all over the world on WRHU in New York.
Well, essentially, World Radio is like a celebration from UNESCO. We wanted to celebrate the use of radio and broadcasting throughout the world. So like what Derek said, what better to do that than to bring almost every single representative of radios from around the contiguous United States to Europe, Asia, Africa, South America, and bring them onto our station and let us broadcast on theirs to celebrate radio and broadcasting. So that was our goal. In celebration of our award, in celebration of the proud work that we do at WRHU, as well as everyone throughout the world, the brainchild of Andy Gladding, and honestly, it just blew up and big throughout proportions. And it's honestly one of the greatest things I could have done at WRHU.
So we're going to get into some of the technicalities of how you accomplish this, getting lots of other radio stations on WRHU for this day-long broadcast. But this must have been a huge coordination event. And I want to bring in Rachel Lusher to talk about this, because Rachel has she's got some responsibility for all the people involved with WRHU. Rachel, welcome in and tell me a little bit about what you do at WRHU and how you help coordinate this kind of thing.
Well, at WRHU, I am the personnel director, and I feel like that role specifically helped me in coordinating World Radio Day, because this entire project began as a very small thing, a very small circle of people. Andy called me, I think, at the end of December to tell me about this, and he's like, this is going to be huge, and it was hard to imagine. And then it was a lot of meetings and coordination, and to see a spreadsheet come to life, because in the beginning, Andy had like 20 names of like professionals all around the country. And then it just expanded to a spreadsheet of like 70 people. And every single student got a chance to reach out to those people and network and learn from them. And those packages aired all day long and all weekend long for World Radio Day weekend, along with our international interviews. So I think that was really special. And especially being one of the managers, it was really cool to watch all of our hard work pay off and to see that spreadsheet really comes alive.
Thanks, Rachel. I'm going to obviously circle back to each one of you for a little more detail on what you did to help make this whole long broadcast come off. I want to talk to Crystal for a minute. Crystal Bermudez, because you're a cultural content director at WRHU, and that seems like a role that would fit in very, very well with getting radio stations all around the world and getting them to broadcast. Tell me a little, if I were listening to WRHU, first of all, what would I have heard going on World Radio Day, Crystal?
Well, I think the real question is, what didn't you hear? Because we did coverage on absolutely everything. And, you know, as you mentioned, I am the cultural content director at WRHU. And really using my position at WRHU helped me, similar to what Rachel said, coordinate and work with these other stations, specifically internationally. I also speak Spanish, so I was able to use that for our broadcast and speak to someone else, another radio host in Spanish, which was pretty cool. We were able to have the show kind of bilingual, and it just, you know, it really snapshots the cultures that are out there, and it really capitalized on that there's so much more out there outside of New York, and it was a great experience to be a part of.
I want to move to Andy right now. Thanks, Crystal. I want to move to Andy. And Andy, okay, so we've got little snippets of kind of what went on. And again, we're going to go in depth a little bit later on in the show with the technicalities and so forth and the workflows. But Andy, you're the one who kind of instigated a lot of this at the radio station. I've heard it said that you kind of say, hey, let's do this thing in a big way. Andy, if I were listening to WRHU on this World Radio Day, what would I have been exposed to?
Well, you know, I'm very lucky that I work for, I had the opportunity to work for WRHU, and my other radio job is working for Salem, New York, which is WMCA and WNYM, which are two very large AM radio stations. So that group, Salem Radio Networks, does talk radio really, really well. And what I wanted to really kind of do with this project was I wanted to give the students an opportunity to get excited and also realize the power of our little college radio station. You know, we think of ourselves as sort of a training platform. We also, you know, do some pretty large regional broadcasts, you know, with some of our sports franchises like the Islanders and the Long Island Nets and Hofstra Athletics. But to really get passionate about FM and AM, you have to realize that it sort of has like a little bit of a mystique to it. And I get exposed to that every day, you know, on the commercial side of my job, you know, being a custodian for a 50,000 watt AM station that, you know, travels great distances. So the impetus here was to say, how do we get the you know, going to be able to share the passion for this and also let, you know, our staff at WRHU in on the fact that this little station, our little 470-watt FM station, could extend its reach and become a global property for, you know, for one day. So I think that if you tuned in on February 12th, what you would have heard was people realizing and awakening to the idea of the power of communication and the power of broadcasting, that when you open that microphone, not only are you serving your local audience, which you're used to serving, you know, Nassau, Queens, and parts of the five boroughs and a little bit of Connecticut and Suffolk County, but now there's other communities that are listening to you. So the idea is really that you want to be able to celebrate and experience the power of community radio, but community radio all around the world. So if you tuned in, you would have heard that celebration. And then these guys and gals did such a terrific job of executing that and really bringing that to life. It was so cool to see.
Okay, I'm getting a better feel now for what I would have heard on WRHU had I been listening. I should have listened to your stream that day, but one of the stations that you picked out, in fact, was a station that I'm part owner of way out in American Samoa. And a lot of folks have no idea where that is. Well, here's what you go to Hawaii and turn left. And halfway to New Zealand, there's a little piece of America just south of the equator. I think it may be 14 degrees south of the equator. It's American Samoa. And a lot of people naturally mispronounce the capital city there. It looks like it's spelled Pago Pago, but in Samoan, it's pronounced Pongo Pongo. And we have a radio station. Actually, we have three radio stations there, three FM stations. And coordinating that, I'm gonna hit up Shayna on this because I know, Shayna, you do a lot of engineering at the station at WRHU. Did Shayna, were you involved in getting the technicalities coordinated so that you could put my radio station, 93 KHJ, on your station for a while?
Yeah, so basically it was me, Andy, and Ed, and we were there the night before, the Thursday night, and we were just going troubleshooting everything and going through everything. And it was really cool because this is my first time ever doing something this big in my entire life. And Andy was mostly there just showing me how to do everything so that I know for the future reference as well. And we would end up being there till 1:30 in the morning that day, just trying to go through everything. And it was just, it was some of the tech stuff was just so funny because we were trying to figure out a Zoom thing at one point. So to have interviews live, and at one point we're all talking or whatever, and I'm trying to figure out why I can't hear anything. I realize it's because I had the mute button on the entire time as well. So that was just, it was just a little couple of funny things, but it was really good being able to be there late at night and just learning everything and going over everything and being able to just be a part of something so great.
All right, cool. Well, we're going to get into, like I keep saying, we're going to get in this deeper technicality. So I want to understand how you got my radio station on your air, and we'll understand that, and what you had to do for different stations all around the world. So that's coming up. Hey, this is a commercial show. It helps put food on my table. So we're going to do a quick commercial here. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech, episode 534. I'm Kirk Harnack in Nashville, Tennessee, in the Telos Alliance studio. And our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store. BGS.cc is the website. And one of the great product lines that they carry is Innovonics. I got to tell you, throughout my radio career, Innovonics, an Innovonics product, was the very first broadcast product I ever bought. I bought an AM audio processor for an AM radio station way back in the early 1980s. Well, Innovonics, of course, has come a long way since then. Let's find out about the Innovonics Aaron 655.
The Aaron 655 is the latest addition to the Innovonics family of rebroadcast receivers. Designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters, the Aaron 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aaron 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports dayparting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface. On the back of the Aran 655, you've got an antenna input, left and right analog inputs and outputs, AES digital input and output, MPX output for the rebroadcast transmitter, and a network port for the IP interface. There's also a terminal block with a series of connections to interface with remote control management equipment. The Aran 655 is compatible with worldwide radio broadcast standards and operates on 90 to 230 volts AC.
And that's kind of what we're talking about here, worldwide broadcast standards. The Aran 655 and a number of other products from Inovonics are ideal for your radio station to do specific jobs, solve problems, and make you sound better on the air. There's a great way to go find out about it, and that's go to the Inovonics website and just Google them. And what's really cool is they have all their products that have a web interface. You can demo them online. You can play with them online and kind of understand the features. That's something that I really like. Hey, welcome back to This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about all kinds of stuff. I just realized my light bulb has gone out. The light bulb at the top of the tower there. I'm going to hang on. Let me bring everybody back in. I'm going to fix that. I got an app for that, I think. Let's see if I got the app. Yeah, there it is. There's the app. And let's see if we can turn the... Wait a minute. Here we go. I got to go back full screen so we can see it. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Ah, yes, there it is. Okay, good. Ooh. It's on a timer. Usually I don't work in the office this late at night. So it goes off automatically. It's LED lights, not like it takes a lot. Hey, we're talking to some great students, and Andy Gladding, also from WRHU in, is it Hempstead, New York? Is that the city of license?
Yes, it is.
Good deal. So we have stations from all over the world that their audio was involved with WRHU on World Radio Day. Edward, you offered to say some things about this, about the technicalities of how this worked. Kind of walk us through how this happened and maybe the different ways that you got theirs. You know, you could have just streamed their audio and put that on, but maybe you did something else. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so it was a combination of multiple things. Essentially, like Shayna said, being there until 1:30 in the morning. Thanks to our beneficiaries over at WRHU, including community volunteers, Hofstra, the Board of Trustees, we were able to have our hands on type of hardware such as QGo Live, other things, also Zoom, Skype, and also we were able to collaborate with the stations to essentially kind of hack their IP streams as well as let ours and theirs broadcast simultaneously, which is why it's called a simulcast. But setting all that up weeks before World Radio Day, getting all the coordination, making sure all the timing was right and correct, and making sure our station has multiple computers networked into one, and each one of those computers was especially programmed to able to capture their broadcast and able to essentially have one of our buses programmed back into theirs to essentially support that simulcast too. So it's a multitude of multiple things, Zoom, Skype, QGo, whatever you can think of, even the Telos phones too. It's a combination of multiple things in order to get this broadcast right and on time.
So thinking about the different ways to put a far off remote radio station, their audio on your air, were you thinking of, okay, what's the way we could do this that would result in the best audio quality, but it's got to be some common technology that we both have. You mentioned QGo Live. We on this show many episodes ago, we spoke with the inventor of QGo Live right here. It's a great way to get, you know, decent quality or high quality audio from one place to another. And there are other, there's audio codecs. The company I work for, Telos, makes some audio codecs. Of course, there's Comrex and Tyline and things like that. Thinking about, Ed, I'll go back to you real quick. What technology turned out to be, result in the best audio quality for you guys to get somebody else's station on your air?
Well, for the best audio quality, we would turn to our tried and true Comrex system, which we have connected to the Long Island Nets, as well as the Nassau Coliseum, where we broadcast the Islanders and Barclays Center. That is our tried and true method of connecting to other stations, but also we use QGo Live. QGo Live also helped us out in multiple ways, and as a backup, we also used Zoom. Surprisingly, Zoom has a pretty good audio quality when it came to broadcasting, too.
That's interesting. I've spoken with another engineer with a large radio group. They do a multi-person morning show in the Florida Panhandle area, and they happen to use Microsoft Teams because he says that what their tests show that Microsoft Teams seems to have about the lowest latency, and the audio quality is really good. So yeah, there's different technologies. It's interesting to use the audio portion of a video chat service, like we're using StreamYard right now, but there's plenty of others. I'm pretty sure that not every service pays attention to audio quality. Again, this friend of mine told me Teams was good. You just reported that Zoom was okay for you guys. Now, most of these video chat services don't support stereo audio. Were you interested in stereo audio from any of your stations, Edward?
Yeah, of course. Stereo is obviously the best audio output that we can get. If it's something pre-recorded, obviously we can go into Adobe Audition and convert M4As or MP3s to WAV files and also from mono to stereo. But there were some things that we had some issues to. Andy can help me out here. Andy, can you chime in on this?
Absolutely. Yeah, what we did was, we had to create sort of a network broadcast environment to make this work. So essentially we had to turn we have four studios at WRHU. Because of the dynamics of the day, we also had another sporting broadcast happening out of our North studio. So we had to do everything out of our South, our main air studio. So what we had to do is we had to create two different bus environments. The first was just environment A, we'll call it, which is what goes out on our WRHU FM and the WRHU.org stream, our program feed. So that was what we're using, let's say, 75% of the day. Now, when bringing in certain affiliates that we couldn't go real time with on either Comrex or QGo, what I had to do is we had to take the Zoom, but because we wanted the station elements to be in full stereo while maintaining a duplex, real time connection, and we had to create a secondary mix. So we would essentially use either our aux bus or audition bus on the board, set that mix up for Zoom, put everybody's headphones into that bus. So when we would leave, we'd leave the program audio environment, and essentially the people in the studio would know, okay, there's going to be a 5 or 6 second delay between what you say in the Zoom environment and then what's coming back on the web channel. So whoever was operating the board would have to be aware that when joining and then breaking away from the other station's air, you had to compensate for that 5 seconds. Now, most of the time it actually worked pretty well. We had a couple of hiccups, but it's up to then the board operator who we're turning the WRHU board into essentially to a master control environment where the board op has to listen to what's coming in from the affiliate, know when to pot them up, and then bring the Zoom audio up so that we could have our host join their broadcast. So it required a little bit of on the go math. And some on-the-fly improvising to make it work. But for the most part, I think we really nailed it. We got it down to a science by the end of the day. It was pretty cool.
I'm a little surprised. So I thought that you were just maybe airing an hour of this station, an hour of that station, but you actually had two-way conversations with these remote radio stations?
Yes.
Oh, we did.
Wow.
We did. Yeah. A couple of the segments we pre-recorded just because of time zone issues. Now, we didn't want to have to tie up our Taiwan partner, for example. They had, we would have to do it at 12 o'clock in the morning their time. Yeah. And we had a Philippine station from Manila. Again, we didn't want to, be going live with them. It's 2 o'clock in the morning in Manila and, 1 o'clock in the afternoon in New York. We kind of mentioned all that. or work through that ahead of time. But most of the, we'll call them the Western Hemisphere things that we did were all in real time. And it was really interesting and exciting.
So I know that Crystal already said that she assisted with the Spanish language stuff, but for the most part, were you speaking English with these other stations?
Yes, for the most part, we were speaking in English with the other stations. The only portion of the show where I did speak Spanish was just, it was like a quick 10-minute conversation with me and another host, actually another radio station here in New York.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Hey, I want to ask Derek. Derek, you were really on top of this whole thing. Talk to me as a producer of this event. Tell me some of the things that were important on your radar. What were some of the concerns that you had to be worried about? How did you know you were getting, like, you know, the right people to talk to at a radio station? What did you have to do to try to help ensure that what went out on WHRU was, oh, let's even say RHU, sorry, was prizeworthy, you know, was worthy of the good results that you wanted to have? Derek?
Two main C's, collaboration and communication, are the main things. Again, as many people here mentioned, we met a lot of times before this event. We didn't just wing this. We went at it in a logical way. We thought which members of our broadcast team are best to interview certain people, and we assigned those interviews accordingly. We set deadlines, listened to them, made sure they were ready to go over the air, and ultimately we aired the best ones that day. We have other ones to air as recurring evergreen content as well going forward. And then really, again, communication, it's just staying on top of people and, you know, as a management group, staying on top of each other to get things done. And ultimately, we were able to do that to have what I thought was a really good broadcast on Friday.
So as a producer, Derek, I know part of your job is to, you know, coordinate the best talent, the best skills. You put the right people together, maybe. Hey, I think that this WRHU host will work best with that foreign radio station. Did you take things like that into account? And if so, what were some of the factors that you brought into that equation?
Well, WRHU is a college radio station, and in that sense, we're trying to train Hofstra University students to reach professional broadcast level. But at the same time, we did take into consideration who our best on-air talent will be for this kind of an event. So we went through everyone, kind of gauged their interest. We had a pre-call, people did their research, and they were prepared going on the air. I mean, they knew what they were talking about, and we felt that was very important to have some sort of, you know, experience and some sort of knowledge of these stations from each person over the air that day.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Wow. Shayna, I wonder if you could speak to this also. I'm interested that you found that Zoom was a helpful thing, that you had some use for, you know, codecs like a Comrex codec. You're going to have a good low latency with that, and you know that it's built for that kind of two-way communication for sure. Shayna, what pleased you? What surprised you? You know, what are you satisfied with technically about what you learned and what you did during the process?
Ooh, that's a great question. So satisfied wise and like. What you were going off of what you were saying, I think the greatest thing was that it was basically something that I never thought could be possible, getting all these stations from all over the world to be able to play over 88.7 and being able to use so many different ways about doing it. I never thought it was something that could be possible, and it was just satisfying to see this huge rundown with like all these things that might have been seemed impossible coming together. And I think that was probably one of the coolest things ever to happen.
Think about, if each of you wouldn't mind, think about what was your favorite technology tool or technique that you know ended up working well. And why don't we throw it back to Edward to think about that for a minute. Edward, you know, what did, if you could say, hey, this worked well, if you're going to do what we did, I would recommend that you cover at least this part of it with this technique, tool, or technology. What do you think, Edward?
Hey, if anything, I'm very glad we just didn't go dead air for about 5 seconds. Our most reliable system was definitely RCS and Wheatstone. Wheatstone is what we use for the board. RCS is for on our computer. Honestly, that held everything together. Like, there could have been times where, like, our computers could have lagged out or we could have, like, misconnected or went over, like, a different airstream. But honestly, thank God for RCS and for Wheatstone for holding all the things together and being versatile too. You could change the board on Wheatstone to do multiple things at multiple times. Same for RCS. You can program multiple things, have different single layouts. We even have a couple students who are visually impaired or mobility lacking. We are able to pre-program RCS especially to help cater those needs. So for me, the best is RCS and Wheatstone.
Andy, so is your facility there audio over IP? Or is it more,
yes,
is it
yeah, more traditional? We're using audio over IP. We are very lucky that the university have been tremendous stewards of this program and of this radio station between our support from the college and our support from the Lawrence Herbert School of Communication. So when it comes time to do infrastructure, they don't skimp. And we did a rebuild about 2 years ago where we put a, you know, an IP88 system in, Wheatstone system. We've been full bore RCS with automation for all that stuff. So we could make the process, the learning process, less about continuous troubleshooting or being limited. Whereas now, if you want to do something at WRHU, you have limitless options. What I really get a kick out of is that, see, I love transmissions. Transmissions has always been my favorite thing. I've worked with satellite transmissions, with audio over IP, video over IP, long-range stuff, local stuff, fiber. And I just love watching the transmissions network come to life, especially when you have all these different pathway options. So you can look at your matrix. You have the matrix up in front of you for your local system, you know, in our case, our Wheatstone system. We look at our router and say, all right, we have 20 different places we have to go today. Which path are we using? Which highway? Which bridge are we going to take to get there and back? And when you break that out and you have so many options to do that, it's really, really awesome. And we're lucky in the sense that, again, we have the support financially and infrastructurally from the university that they really do value this. And we had the opportunity to speak with the provost, Herman Berliner, who has been a big supporter of the station for his about 30 tenure at the school. And they really do value their FM property. So it translates into us being able to pull off something like this and really, not go too nuts technically, you know?
Derek, I think you mentioned something about some portions of the day being evergreen or reusable on social media. I didn't get to hear any of this, although I heard about my own radio station being part of it. I know they were very excited about it. You guys were too. It was kind of cool. Hopefully you got a really good connection with them and got to know our morning team out there, right? Drawing a blank. John Raynor. What's available for people who missed the live broadcast? Do you have anything on a website or somewhere where people could hear some of what happened that day, Derek?
Things are coming shortly. We have over 50 pre-produced interviews with industry professionals that are going to be out, and we're going to have some recaps of this event on our social media channels as well, because us as a radio station, we're really starting to continue to speed up this transition, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic, the transition from traditional to really digital media. And we're more than just your traditional radio station. We're really redefining radio, because radio entails not just what you're hearing, but also, to this point, what you're seeing. Radio really is starting to have a visual component, and we are trying to expand in that sense. And this was the first step in doing that, this kind of a broadcast.
You know what? That is a something that I want to explore more with each of you, because you're each of you is young. Even Andy is young. So we're gonna when we come back from our break, I want to talk about visual radio and how that plays into your vision, each of you, your vision of what radio is going to be in the future. I know people are dabbling with that and checking it out and trying it out. So we're going to come back and check with that shortly. We are talking to this great bunch of students and faculty and Andy Gladding here about WRHU and what was the World Radio Day. Windows to the World is what we're calling this episode, because they gave us a view, a slice of radio from all around the world. And I got to tell you, I've had the pleasure of working for my employer, Telus Alliance, and actually going around the world and listening to radio around the world. Although lots of times I would go into a station where nobody spoke English, except maybe the engineer or maybe a translator. And that was a little bit tough being in Thailand, you know, and nobody's speaking English to me. So it was pretty tough. We're going to come back and hear about things like that coming up in just a minute. We're going to hear right now, though, from a sponsor who is outside the U.S. It's Broadcast Bionics from England. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Phil from Broadcast Bionics in the UK, and we've been helping broadcasters and podcasters to work remotely for some time. But in 2020, this has become more of a necessity for many. X-Screen, Bionic Studio, and our other products can be fully functional via the internet on a VPN connection or RDP session. If you have any type of Telos VX, HX6 or IQ6, you may already be using the free edition of X-Screen 2, giving you a software interface to go alongside your VSET controller. The subscription edition not only adds a cloud database and unrestricted workstation licenses, but also allows the user to call screen using a USB headset. Bionic Talk Show, part of the Bionic Studio, also allows this. Up until now, it's mainly been used for remote broadcasts, but now more and more stations have call screeners and producers working from home or socially distanced offices. The teams can still collaborate, communicate, and deliver programming with the help of our tools. Many routers will have a VPN option. Your local IT specialist can help with this. Using a VPN, our workstation client software can be run on a home PC or laptop as if it was running on a machine at the studio. With remote desktop, the software still runs on a PC at the station. Simple port forwarding on your router may be all that's required to then control that PC and deliver the headset audio from another device using RDP, which is available as part of Windows. For technical help, our support team are on hand. You can email them on support@bionics.co.uk. Combined with our Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio products, broadcast quality audio can be delivered from contributors around the corner or around the globe. They can even instant message with the shared chat windows and see the now playing information from within the Anywhere remote web interface. For more information, go to bionic.radio. We're helping broadcasters around the world to adapt to the new normal with innovative tools from Broadcast Bionics.
You know, that's kind of refreshing to have an ad that doesn't talk at you for 2 minutes. That's Broadcast Bionics. Go to bionic.radio to find out all about what Broadcast Bionics does, or as they say, what Broadcast Bionics do. They supply software and systems to radio stations literally all over the world, including the BBC, radio stations here in America, some of the biggest broadcasters in England, and their systems for doing social media, for doing talk shows, for keeping track of winners, and people who are talking on the radio. Just amazing stuff. One of the things that I really like about Bionics is the fact that you can do audio editing based on text, using very fast speech to text. And then instead of, you know, trying to edit with squiggly lines on the screen, you just, you know, if you want to see how many times did our guest say banana today, well, you can just type in banana. It'll find all the places where they said banana. So cool stuff. Bionic.radio. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack on This Week in Radio Tech. We're here with a bevy of terrific young people from Hofstra University, WRHU Radio, and they did World Radio Day, and Windows to the World is what they called it. So let's see okay, we got some things to talk about that I see in the chat window here. But we were going to, what did I say right before the break?
Visual radio.
Visual radio, yes. Okay, who all wants to talk about visual radio? Just speak right up.
Yeah, I could take it.
Okay, go ahead, Derek. Tell me about that.
So at WRHU, we are starting to make the transition into visual radio. And this was really one of the first steps in doing that, doing this kind of a broadcast where we're having a full-fledged, not only traditional radio effort to market and promote it, but also we're now doing it over our social media channels. We have a brand new social media team that I'm a part of that is in our inaugural year, and we're trying to expand our reach and our audience and ultimately the people we recruit to the station. Cameras in the studio and a system for live broadcasting is something down the road for us that we could be getting in the near future. So that's very exciting to begin implementing that when we do get that. And we're just converting our studios into really all-in-one production space for video and audio. And someone who's really into all that production stuff, it's definitely exciting for me as a college sophomore to potentially have the opportunity to work with this equipment going forward.
Early in the show, we talked about an award that you guys have won. And Rachel, I think you know something about this award that was given. If Rachel's there. Yeah, Rachel, talk to me about what you guys have earned.
Yeah, so we received recognition from UNESCO and the Model UN. And hearing that was exciting. I remember our general manager, Bruce Avery, told us on the call a few months back, and to take that all in, to receive such global recognition from Molly Wen, it was truly humbling. And the entire event that we planned of World Radio Day weekend really had a celebratory vibe, because after such a tough year with the coronavirus pandemic, a lot of us on this call are news reporters and we work with Newsline. It's a lot of bad news, and to have an entire weekend where we can shed positive light on our success and the resilience of radio, and to be able to share that on a platform with stations across the globe was an incredible experience, and it really was refreshing, again, to have that celebratory vibe the entire weekend. So I think that's something that really stuck out to me, and to win that award on top of it and to have other stations congratulate us and celebrate with us was truly special.
One of the things that I've noticed about radio around the world, a few years ago, I walked into a radio studio and it was in just outside of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. And I walked in the studio and I was introduced to the lady who was on the air, and somebody pulled me aside and whispered and said, "She has 45 million listeners right now." they beam her back to India. And yeah. So I think that was the number. I hope I'm not exaggerating by a factor of 10, but I was floored. And my point there is radio around the world is very important. It's really important in all over the world, but I was just impressed by how important it is in India, in some of the Southeast Asian countries that I've been to, in Indonesia, for example, of course, in Singapore. And I've got to visit some stations in China. I'll share that with you in a minute. But who wants to chat about, you know, in the U.S., we have so many easy competitors to radio, right? We have so much streaming that's available that's not exactly radio. Remember back in 1980 when video was going to kill the radio star, right? And didn't quite happen. I remember when 8-track tapes were supposed to kill radio. That didn't happen either. Who wants to talk about your fascination with radio around the world in terms of, wow, look at the population, the global population that radio reaches?
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, when people
shows your passion.
Dead, it's not true.
I should call on the individual. You're also excited. Yeah,
you can tell that we're really excited about.
I can tell. Okay, let's see. Let's defer to Rachel because we don't have a camera on her. So, Rachel, give us your thought on that.
Well, some people say that radio is dead, and that's completely untrue because there's nothing like radio. It's reliable. It defines local communities. There's nothing like it. It's always there for groundbreaking events and natural disasters, and nothing brings a community together the same way radio does. And I think World Radio Day weekend really proved it. And to celebrate World Radio Day on the 13th was significant because it is the 10th World Radio Day. So that was pretty cool for the 10th anniversary to kind of fall in line with this really cool award we won. But radio is not dead. And I think seeing so many young broadcasters have so much passion in radio, because this entire weekend wasn't just about the history, it's also about the future. And I have the privilege of working with so many of my colleagues at the station, and we have a staff of over 250 college students who are so dedicated to radio. So to see that, I think WRHU is a living example of why radio is not dead.
Perfect. Absolutely. Edward, you seemed excited to get a word in about the global radio audience.
Yeah. Not just to talk about the global radio audience, but as radio itself. Now, the reason why we won the award is because of perseverance during COVID. That's one of the major things why we won this award. Now, throughout the U.S. and probably throughout the world too, most radio stations have either gone dark or completely gone to automation. For us, we persevered, as in we brought in both live and pre-produced programming, both through recording through our computers, going through blog talk or through Zoom, pre-producing and airing it, since we do have a remote access, thanks to Andy Gladding, to our station. So back in the olden time, let's go back to history a little bit. So essentially, what became before radio? Telegraph, just a simple, just electron traveling through a wire. After that came radio, and after that came TV. But after all things, as we can see in Texas with the the snow and power going down there, the most reliable network of information that everyone can go to is radio.
Yeah, that's a good point. If radio is pretty immediate. I wonder how, you know, in the U.S. these days, when there's really bad weather, like tornadoes or things like that, people do tend to go to their TV first. At least that's my impression. And part of that's because some radio stations have kind of, you know, locked the door at night, or maybe, you know, when the tornadoes may be out. But TV stations seem to take that obligation more seriously. What do you think it is around the world? Do people tune into radio first for news and breaking information, you know, a gas leak, bad weather, a storm, an explosion, something like that? What's your impression? Who wants to take that?
I can speak to this. I've worked for a couple of different companies that set up emergency alert paging and disaster recovery and alerting systems using FM FM broadcast. One of the most recent projects I did that was with a company called GSS, Global Security Systems, and they have a product that they were using to create basically FM paging. They were taking RDS data and RDS triggers and using a proprietary paging system to broadcast alerts, text data, GPIs, so you could trigger a hurricane, island hurricane warning system, you know, the alarms, klaxon alarms you hear in the distance. They could all be triggered using FM. But we talk about the reliability. And around the world, it's easy to protect get a station on the air if you put steps in place ahead of time, like making sure your building is weatherproofed, you have a backup generator, you are regularly servicing and maintaining your equipment. You should then be able to keep your signal on the air at least for a couple of days if there's a natural disaster or an issue. So in those communities internationally, people do rely very much on FM and AM broadcasters because it's very difficult, especially if you live in mountainous terrain, it's very difficult to get TV, broadband internet. If you're in a lot of countries, don't have the same kind of cellular site integration that we have in the U.S. and in Europe.
Yeah.
So you're going to lose that. You're going to lose that capability really quickly. Whereas with FM or AM, as long as the station has been has protected its infrastructure and put a moderate amount of money into a facility, Kirk, as you know, owning a couple of stations in a in an island, the station can at least stay on the air and serve its purpose. Kirk. You can even speak to that. Why don't you briefly tell the guys a story about your recent helicopter adventure?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So this wasn't out of the country. It was in Hawaii, and I'm part owner of a radio station on the island of Kauai, which we play your 80s, 90s, and now is the kind of station that it is. And the transmitter site is very difficult to get to. It's on the ridge or what used to be the rim of a volcano. Now that Kauai is the oldest island in the Hawaiian chain. So while on the big island, lava is building up the island every year. Well, on Kauai, parts are just falling off back in the ocean, right? So it's getting smaller as time goes on. So this transmitter site is on a very steep peak, and there's no flat land around there. There's one little spot of flat land that's about as big as a living room rug. That's it. And that's where the helicopter lands, because you can't, if you're 21 years old and in great shape, you can hike to this site, but you'll be tuckered out when you get there. You have to go up a couple thousand feet from where you can park. Anyway, we went up there, did a day's long worth of work. The helicopter came and went several times because there were a number of engineers working there that day. And he was going to be back about 4 o'clock to pick up me and my partner there. And 4 o'clock came and the helicopter didn't. Why? Because it was socked in the clouds, absolutely socked in. And I was kind of afraid this happened. I'm a meteorologist and I'm a pilot, fixed wing pilot. And I thought, well, what are we going to do here? These clouds, I was looking at the radar. We did have cell coverage. We're looking at the radar and thinking, I don't know if these clouds are going to leave or not. So we did talk to the helicopter company and eventually to the pilot. And he said, I can't come get you after dark. I can't, even if the clouds leave, you're up there overnight unless I get you before dark. So he said, if these clouds aren't going to leave, you need to hike down. If you hike down about 1,000 feet, you'll be in the clear and I can find you and pick you up. And he told us where to go. So we hiked down, and folks, this was no easy hike. I was covered in mud because a lot of places you just slide down. You just slide down. In fact, this one ridge that we walked across was about 5 feet wide and 500 feet down either side. Yeah. And I thought, well, if I fall, I'll just grab some of the vegetation and hold on. No, the vegetation were these ferns and they would just break right off. There was no handhold whatsoever. I found out after we got extracted. In fact, we were charged an extra $100 for extraction. I was happy about that. I found out later that ridge we walked across that was 5 feet wide, 500 feet down. Yeah, that's Dead Man's Ridge. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it can be exciting going to transmitter sites. And I've actually had more excitement than that in a few places. One place that was particularly interesting, did you have any radio stations on from mainland China? I wouldn't think so, but I'd ask.
The closest we got was Taiwan.
Taiwan. Okay. Been to Taiwan. Oh, been to some awesome radio stations there. Just friendly. Oh, so friendly. And I mean, really hip. Great radio stations. Went to one station that was a classical format, and the station general manager lady, she ran a shift in the afternoon where she did the, you know, announced all the classical composers and such. But in mainland China, I went to some of the radio stations there, and there are definitely armed guards at each end of the hallway, and you're escorted through. And there's a master control area where the announcers are closely watched. And it was, yeah, pretty interesting, pretty different than what we do here. But everybody was carefully watched. I don't think I'm saying anything that is not, you know, not known by people who've taken tours. So, all right. Well, back to World Radio Day, Windows on the World with WRHU. Shane, we haven't heard from you in a while. I'm glad you got reconnected. You are also a reporter with WRHU, reporter and kind of a junior engineer there. What about the World Radio Day was especially meaningful for you? What contribution do you think that you're most proud of, I should ask?
Yeah, I'm sorry I got disconnected. My little brother decided to shut the Wi-Fi on me because his game service was running slow. So I'm back now and we're all good.
Little brother.
But my favorite thing about being a part of World Radio Day was that I was able to connect with different engineers from all over the country. And I was able to really sit down and talk to them and learn a lot about their craft and what they do. And I'm just starting off in engineering myself. I used to be actually our former morning show director, and I've been a reporter for the longest time. And now finally coming into my own as an engineer. So just being able to hear like the different terms that they use and their experiences and what it took for them to become engineers, I think that was my favorite part about World Radio Day, was just being able to connect with everybody.
Got you. The connections were very, very important. Let's see, Crystal, you had something you wanted to add on this topic as well. Go ahead, Crystal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think something that I really was able to not only learn about, but appreciate was how powerful radio is. I mean, we spoke we co-hosted a show with Rumba Therapy and with Mario Murillo, who's the host. And he was able to connect us to other hosts as well from Guatemala, from Colombia, and we also heard from a radio station in Mexico. And the amazing thing with, you know, these hosts that joined the station with us and were able to speak with us, they do a lot of work with indigenous communities and indigenous radio. And, you know, it was a really quite the learning experience for me, at least, because one thing I was able to learn that a lot of these countries and a lot of these indigenous communities struggle to have radio aired in their communities. And so one thing that I thought was really, really powerful was that they preserve their culture and their language through radio, and they communicate through that form. So it was really nice to see that, you know, we're not only lucky, but, you know, also privileged to have the technology that we have, the access that we have, and the amount of people we can connect to. A lot of these communities are in need of help, and, you know, luckily, a lot of people do offer that help and allow them to communicate in that form. So it was a wonderful reminder of how powerful radio truly is. And like Rachel mentioned, it's not dead.
Cool. That's invigorating. And yeah, I found the same thing traveling around the world to find other cultures doing radio and how invigorating that invigorated me to see how they were still very excited about it. I got to tell you, I was in, I think it was in Jakarta, and I was in a big radio facility and I'm walking down the hallway. And honestly, I'd been on the road in Southeast Asia for a couple of weeks and I was getting tired of not hearing anybody speak American English. My brain was working overtime because everybody was trying so hard. English second language, right? But your brain is trying to decipher, what did he just say? And I'm walking down the hallway and they tell me to turn into this one studio. And in this one studio, nobody was speaking, you know, Singlish, you know, or, you know, a version of English from Southeast Asia. I walked in, they said, "Hello, mate, how you doing?" And I'm thinking, oh, wow, people that speak maybe kind of the Queen's English. It was, my brain was like, I can talk to these people. So I think it's amazing to first of all, that so much the rest of the world cares enough to speak English. That's just awesome. And we do such a rotten job of learning a second language. We got to take a break in just a minute. Who's got Andy, you almost look like you've got something to add at this point. You're smiling real big.
Oh, I could, yeah, just from my international engineering work, I completely agree with what you're saying. It's always, you know, you spend a week or two in another country working on a project. And the minute you get back to the U.S. airport, you're like, oh, it's like so easy to order a hamburger. Wow, that thing just changed real fast.
I know, I'm in India, and I tell my, I said, my host, his name actually was Jesus. I said, Jesus, I guess there's any chance of getting a hamburger here. So he says, oh, no chance. I said, but we can get you a lamb burger. So yeah, we had a lamb burger.
I had a job in St. John's, British Virgin Islands, and the tower was all the way at the top of this 3,500 foot peak. And so we're driving up, and it's a beautiful day. We get about 3/4 of the way up, and the truck stops. So the guy driving the truck says, "Oh, my friend, we cannot go further for right now." I said, "What's the matter?" He goes,
"Suspense.
Andy's frozen. Suspense. Oh no, will we find out?" Now would be a good time to take a commercial break and let Andy get reconnected. Was that fortuitous or what?
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh my.
All right. Well, that's okay. We got one quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we want to get a quick comment from each and every one of you about World Radio Day. And you know, what was the highlight of your day? Just something quick from each one and maybe something you'd like to pass along to other folks watching this. This is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 534. I'm Kirk Harnack in Nashville, Tennessee, in the Telos Alliance studio. And I got to tell you, so many studios these days, you need to get your smartphone connected to the audio console. Maybe you just need to get a quick phone call on the air and you don't have a telephone hybrid in that studio. Use your phone and use a Bluetooth device like this one. This is the Bluetooth audio gadget from our friends over at Angry Audio. You want to find out more about this? You go to angryaudio.com and let's see if I can figure out how to share this. There we go. How to share this screen with you so you can see it. There we go. That is the Bluetooth audio gadget. Let me full screen that. You can see it even better. The Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. It's got an easy way to pair with your phone. It's got a little spring-loaded switch there, and you can do your pairing. It'll pair with lots of different announcers if you have different announcers coming in and out of your studio. Easy to pair up. If you make a phone call and you select this device as the audio device on your phone, then you'll get great-sounding phone call audio in and out of this device, which, of course, is wired to your audio console. Now, let's imagine, though, you have a different situation. Imagine you have an interview recorded on your phone. Right. Or maybe a song that you've put on the phone, maybe a hard to get song from an unknown artist and you want to put it on the radio. Well, then if it's a one way transmission from your phone into the console, you get the high quality audio mode. It sounds really good. I mean, it's almost like being wired. So check it out. It is the Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. You can get this from any dealer that sells Angry Audio equipment. Check with your dealer. I know that Broadcaster General Store certainly does, or you can go to angryaudio.com and find out more. They have lots of products that'll make your life easier in the studio, plus all the Studio Hub gear too at angryaudio.com. Hey, one more quick sponsor. I want you to hear from a good friend of ours, John Takak, about Max Connect Wireless. John?
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It has also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
John Tokok isn't the only engineer satisfied with his Max Connect wireless service. It's really good. It'll give you a great connection to your transmitter site, a fixed IP address. It's also great for remote broadcasts. We've used it here on This Week in Radio Tech. I've used the service at my own radio stations when our internet was out due to a tornado running through our town. So Max Connect Wireless, check it out on the web at maxconnectwireless.com. I know it's spelled funny, but we'll put it in the show notes. All right, let's bring everybody back in. There's Andy. Hey, Andy.
having fun with all sorts of technology at the home.
Andy thought I was done talking. We're gonna kind of wrap up the show, but hear from each of you real quick. And so, tell you what, let's take it in order. Derek, why don't you kind of go first with us here and tell us about World Radio Day? What takeaway did you have? What would you like to leave us with, advice wise, Derek? Hand muted. Let's see. Can I unmute you? No, you have to unmute yourself.
I got you. It happens. This has been the year, unfortunately, just forgetting to unmute. Radio is not dead. Radio never died. It simply evolved. You see all the phases of radio. AM still exists. FM still exists. Now we're moving into digital with podcasting, with audio streaming, and we're implementing video too. So I think radio is no longer just turning on your AM dial, like when Marconi and Fessenden invented the technicalities of it. I think it's very important to realize that radio is just so much more than the AM/FM dial. It's now really become an art form, and it's become really consolidating and implementing different media together to create an on-air product that's enthralling to the consumer and entertaining to listen to. And I think, emphasizing video production and video integration into radio, whether that be doing tri-casting or live streams, I think that's what the industry is moving towards. And I think the more implemented the media gets, the more integrated it all is, the better.
Sounds like we want to be where people are. We want to make it easy for people to find us and listen to us and view us if that is the case.
Accessibility. That's key.
Rachel, you are next in line. Rachel Lusher, maybe you can give us a little insight into what was your favorite takeaway from World Radio Day.
I think my biggest takeaway was that World Radio Day was a learning experience for me. Like, for example, Derek Futterman on the call, he taught me how to voice promos, and he taught me that it's different from how I would do news reports. So that especially stuck out to me. The biggest thing that I put together for this project was a tribute to the late audio radio legend, Mark Wiener, who went to Hofstra and had an incredible professional career and cared enough to come back to Hofstra to help the next ones in line. And Andy Gladding sent me so many contacts and people that he was connected with, and to speak to all of them, I learned so much about how special WRHU is, and the call letters were WVHC back in the day, and a lot of people from the early 70s, late 60s described the bond they had with their fellow colleagues when they were in college, and how special the radio station is, and that has been consistent through generations, and all of them told me, I bet you have your circle of close friends at the station, and some of them are on this call right now, and that's really special to me. But to see the cross-generational similarity was really special, and it was an incredible learning experience to watch all of that come to life and to honor Mark Wiener, who was part of the tight-knit group of the station 50 years ago that led it to where it is now. So I think that was my biggest takeaway.
Rachel, hearing you talk about people's passion for radio reminds me that I think everybody on this call right now, everybody on this podcast probably has the radio virus, and and you have it for life. You're not going to get rid of it. And let's check in with Edward. Edward, what was your biggest takeaway from this this exercise, World Radio Day?
Honestly, my biggest takeaway is honestly just the tech. A fun fact I like to tell people is that I'm actually a mechanical engineer, and that radio is not just for broadcasters, just for journalists. It's also for the tech people too. You can go behind a board, you can take apart an amplifier and put it back together again, and your product was essentially broadcast yourself to the world. So my biggest takeaway is definitely just doing the tech wise, me and the tech team with Annie, Shane, and I, and also getting my message across the almost tens of thousands, even millions of viewers and listeners. It's a huge impact that you don't really realize until the product is out there for you to see.
Very good. Awesome. Yeah, I agree with you. There's so many disciplines that work into radio, whether it's HR, being on the air, audio production, mechanical things. We got to have that too. There's so many things that go into that. I just watched a video on towers today and compliance with some of the new tower rules. There's a lot of mechanics there, I tell you. Crystal, oh yeah, go ahead.
No, I said fun, tower compliance. Great way to spend an afternoon.
I know. It seems boring. But you know, it's, well, I used to have an employee who made math and mechanics fun. And he explained, yeah, he really did. And I thought, this is actually pretty interesting. Crystal Bermudez, what was your biggest takeaway from World Radio Day in your position?
Well, there was so much to take away from this full day event. But I would say my biggest takeaway from working in for World Radio Day was really realizing how powerful our voices are, and using our platform and connecting with other stations around the world was a pretty amazing experience. You know, just the thought that I was airing over at South Africa, and they must have been so confused, like, who is this American speaking on my radio right now? And I just think that with radio and with World Radio Day, and especially community radio, how important it is. I was actually speaking with one of the stations based in New York, where she was telling me her station, and specifically in her community, is heavily populated with Latinos and a lot of immigrants. And so on her segment of the show, she gives community updates on resources to reach out to and things of that nature. So just seeing how important community radio is and how it connects people and informs them is a big takeaway, and why we should continue to strive for that.
You guys are making me excited about radio, like I was back when I started in the 1970s. Shayna, what was your biggest takeaway on World Radio Day?
Just piggybacking off of what Rachel and Ed were saying, the biggest takeaway for me about World Radio Day was being able to be so involved with the tech and everything that was going on, and also the learning experience behind everything. This is, like I said, this is something that none of us have ever done before, and it's one of the biggest things in our lives up to this point. And being able to learn everything along the way, how to set things, how to route things properly, how to get all these stations to connect, how to put on a really long broadcast, like they said, from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and how to build the rundown properly for that. It was just exciting getting to learn all of that, and as well just talking to we are professionals, but also being able to talk to other professionals in our field as well, and getting to hear their experiences and what World Radio Day means to them as well. That was probably my favorite part.
Awesome. It's been good for everybody. Andy, you made a lot of people happy here, and I imagine you're a little happy yourself. Tell me your biggest takeaway, Andy.
You know, I'll be the hippy dippy one on the end of the call here. But I thought the best part about this was group project. I mean, it was so fun to see all these guys, you know, really develop a role, and not just what they wanted to do on air, but a lot of background production and 2 or 3 months of work went into making this happen. So everybody, I got a chance to watch everybody sort of develop new skill sets and figure out what they were good at and where they wanted to, what parts of this project they wanted to attack. And what these guys really excel is that they were able to, you know, build a team using the framework we gave them. They built the team. Took the parameters, executed the project, and led a group of about 40 people to make this happen. And that was the coolest part for me. I loved watching this team here make this come alive and give it life. Because without the people at WRHU and the students, this is a meaningless thing. you know, it's the students that give it the excitement and make it passionate and make it fun. Without these guys, there's just no point.
Should we look for another effort for World Radio Day next year?
Oh, absolutely. I think the consensus was we definitely want to do it again.
I mean, the amount of skills, team building and skill learning and skill honing that goes into this is just amazing. I'm so glad for you guys and so proud of the work that you've done, and hope another award is coming your way. You think so?
Let's hope in the fall we get, you know, another Marconi if we can.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. We're out of time. Derek, Rachel, Edward, Crystal, Shayna, and Andy, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for taking some time out of your life to talk about this. It's been absolutely delightful. And I hope that I know that our audience, you know, this I'm so reinvigorated. Sometimes, you know, we see all the competitors to radio and been in it for a long time. It doesn't sometimes seem as fun as it used to be. But you guys make it fun. And the project was just great. Thanks so much.
Well, Kirk, let me just tell you, when anybody says that, you know, young people don't listen to the radio and young people aren't, you know, excited about radio, I beg to differ. Look at this crew right here. This is the next generation, and they're going to be going strong.
Good deal. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it so much. We're going to close it out now. I want to give a big thanks to our producer, Suncast, for producing the show. And also a big thanks to Andrew Zarian, owner of the GFQ Network, headquartered in New York. Thanks very much, Andrew. Thanks very much, Suncast. We'll be back with another broadcast next week. Tell your friends, hit the like button, subscribe on YouTube. If you're watching this after the fact on YouTube, we appreciate that. And do tell your friends about it. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.